Funk.
Dan.
How are you doing?
Doing great.
I am also doing great.
Yay.
I just realized I'm looking in the Pizone here and talking about visual stuff on a podcast. You've got a lot of good, interesting stuff behind you that I can look at, but I don't have a shelf at like eye level behind me.
Well, you do have your Slap Nuts Boulevard sign.
I do have my prestigious Slap Nuts Boulevard sign.
You should put some kind of artwork behind you.
Like acoustic foam count. I got some of that on the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's utility.
That was my wallpaper in Animal Crossing for a while, was acoustic foam. And now I've got different stuff. I just got the Ruins wallpaper from Sahara.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you always buy from Sahara?
I do. Whenever she's in town, I'll buy one of everything.
Yeah. I don't do the area rug thing. I do the flooring and the wallpaper because it's mysterious.
It is mysterious, but sometimes the area rugs can be a little mysterious.
Can they?
No.
Oh, okay. I just got like a blue circle one time.
Yeah. Usually it's a blue circle or I have a mat that's like, welcome.
Oh.
And I have like a fluffy white one and like a one with like blocks of color on it.
I've seen that welcome mat some places, and I think I assume that you could customize mats and maybe add text or something, but it just comes with a welcome thing? Okay.
And personally, I don't really use the mysterious wallpapers and flooring just because they don't really fit in with what I'm trying to do. But I have office wallpaper and office flooring if you want that.
Well, the difference between our homes and Animal Crossing is that yours is very nice.
Thank you.
Yours is very themed. It looks like
a lot
an
of
adult
plants,
lives
a
there.
Lot of candles it's, and comfort.
Yeah, it's very nice and classy. Mine, I have always made my Animal Crossing house the stupidest place possible. I mean, before we got married and you were just like seeing my apartment, I guess by the time you met me, my apartment was pretty toned down. Like, it was definitely just a single dude's apartment when you met me.
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of plain. I mean, I'm talking about the San Francisco apartment.
Yeah.
There really wasn't much going on. There wasn't really anything on the walls.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, it was plain when you met me, but I think there was a time where my place was stupid.
Oh, yeah, like, when you were younger. Yeah.
When I was younger, when I had like Mortal Kombat arcade machines and poker tables and just like a billion stupid posters and empty. I was the college, like, I'm done with this whiskey and now I'm going to put it on my shelf. You know, like I had those. I had a million Milwaukee's Best Light bottle caps shoved into my ceiling. It was definitely a young single idiot's apartment. You had a classy young guy's apartment when
I
you met
me. I got to experience the more refined Dan.
You did.
Sophisticated. Yeah. Worldly.
Well, now we've got the two rooms here where I've got the game room. And the game room is even kind of like well put together.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it's real nice. But I gave the living room just to like, hey, you are an adult and you know nice things. And you made that like very nice and classy.
Thank you.
And I get to put up all my silly Rocky and Nintendo and Waluigi stuff in the game room.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Animal Crossing. It carries over to that. It's very classy for you, and mine is more stupider. I wasn't going to say more stupider. I know that's not what you do. I was going to say more stupider stuff. Things of the stupider persuasion.
Okay, yeah. You remember Air Turkish Baths, or the Air Bathhouse in New York?
Yeah, the salt baths.
In my mind, that is like the pinnacle of interior design.
Yeah, the Hitman
just like, yeah, just like really serene, smells amazing, candlelit brick, chandeliers.
Yeah.
So my goal is just, in everything, is to get as close to that as I humanly can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also at Air Turkish Baths, it's just constant KK Slider music.
Yeah.
I'd be into that.
Very serene.
I'm so glad you now know why everyone loves KK Slider.
Oh, he's great. Well, we watched KK Slider videos before, like long before even Animal Crossing New Horizons was a known quantity.
We did, and they are funny in a vacuum. It just is silly sounding music, but like with like there's like a mythos around KK Slider.
I didn't realize that he was such a like prestigious figure in the Animal Crossing universe. I thought he was just a little dog that played in the bar.
No, he's like the Bob Dylan. He's like this like legendary journeyman folk artist. He's a rambling man who also plays like every single genre. He does like metal and electronica and
flamenco.
Reggae. And, yes, like Russian folk music and stuff. I just got Comrade KK. That's a great track. He's the best.
I really liked Cap'n too. I hope Cap'n makes an appearance in New Horizons.
My hope, because we've played a lot of New Horizons, my hope is that we haven't seen him yet, or that it's going to be a not DLC, but like a seasonal thing, where it's like, oh, it's the summer and Cap'n's Island Tours opens up or something.
That was my first taste of Animal Crossing personality when you showed me the little videos of setting sail with Cap'n and he'd sing about like peanut butter and celery and his wife and all that stuff.
This man who lives with the sea. Yeah. Oh, it's just the best. Just the best.
Speaking of complex layered storytelling.
Yes. Oh, the thing. The thing that is the title of the podcast episode this week. And also, coincidentally, the title of a film called Magnolia. Was that what you were trying to set me up for?
Well, kind of.
I didn't really stick it, did I?
I thought you were just going to say Magnolia. And you sort of did.
No, I made it way longer than necessary.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Oh, speaking of longer than necessary.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's Magnolia.
Yes, there we go. We got there. Edit that out. Oh, boy, Magnolia. Okay, let's talk about this.
Let's do it.
Here's my experience with Magnolia before seeing it.
Okay.
We both saw it for the first time.
For the listeners at home, Dan's slowly getting undressed for some reason.
The pizzone gets a little hot. I'm a little sweaty in here. It's almost AC time. Almost AC time. So there's some fun sound. Yeah. Okay. Magnolia. This came out at a time. What are you laughing at?
All right. Good. Proceed.
Okay. It came
out. You're just gesticulating wildly.
You've met my mom. I have that gene. So. Magnolia came out at a time where I was obsessed with movies and box office, and you know, I subscribed to Entertainment Weekly, and so every week I was reading about the upcoming movies and like reading movie reviews and stuff. And Magnolia was very much talked about because Boogie Nights was a huge, huge thing. This is the follow-up, and people didn't seem to know what to think of this movie. And the way people wrote about it and just like the mystery of it and how weird it was and everything, it made me look up the ending because everyone's just like, well, we're not going to spoil the ending here, but oh, it's crazy.
But why didn't you just see it instead of getting the ending spoiled?
I'm guessing it's because it was over 3 hours long.
So?
I think I was probably just like something like a Braveheart or a Private Ryan, 3 hours plus. Cool. It's going to be exciting war stuff. This one, all I knew was that like, Tom Cruise was a weird, like, penis-worshipping guy and had a really good cast. And like, but I hadn't even seen Boogie Nights at the time. I didn't see Boogie Nights until, like, much later in life. So I was just more fascinated with the way people talked about this movie. And I read what the ending is, which we will not get to that until later. But I went in knowing what the ending was.
So
basically,
the thing about this movie is that it's got a huge cast and a really notable cast. Mm-hmm. There's Tom Cruise, William H. Macy, John C. Reilly, Julianne Moore, Jason Robards.
A ton from Boogie Nights.
Yes.
A lot of crossover there.
And they're all kind of connected in some way. And that is what is set up in the very beginning of the movie. And it is done by like presenting these little anecdotes of like, such coincidence that it can't be coincidence. It's got to be the hand of fate or something.
Right.
And based on the tone of those little vignettes, I thought this was going to be like a black comedy based on that. And there was narrator that was like kind of silly and stuff. I thought it was going to be a black comedy. And it sort of was for the first quarter of the movie. And then it just turned into like an extreme melodrama.
Yeah, some of the characters are more like more dark comedy, like some of the vignettes. It is almost like a series of kind of intertwined short films. Like I feel like William H. Macy's character, Quiz Kid Donnie Smith, like a former child game show contestant, his whole way of being is kind of funny just because William H. Macy is being extremely William H. Macy. Mm-hmm. His story isn't necessarily funny, I wouldn't say.
No, none of that's the thing. It's like the way they set it up in the beginning with everyone, it seemed like it was going to be compelling, and then it just wasn't.
Oh no, it never pays off. It never comes together in this interesting, like the thing they promised at the beginning of like, oh, this crazy coincidence. I think you watch this whole movie thinking, well, you would know this more than me because I knew how it ended.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of knew it was going to be this what the fuck ending. Were you expecting the entire time that it's like, oh, all these stories, it all comes together at the end? And some...
Well, it didn't really come together.
That's what I'm saying. But were you expecting that?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
I was expecting that. And I feel like that kind of thing has been done better in like Crash, which I know isn't a great movie. It's kind of a shitty movie, but at least it did that well. And then what was that other movie that it was like a bunch of people that it was a bunch of different stories that weren't necessarily related and then all comes together at the end?
Lost?
No. This is a movie. It's like there are people on a bus and someone gets shot and like they're stuck. This one group of people is stuck.
Not the Time Code movie, is it?
No, this was like the early 2000s. I'm sure people listening at home are like screaming the name of it.
Phone Booth?
No. It was like similar to Crash.
Are you talking about the NC-17 like 90s Crash, or are you talking about the like Best Picture Crash?
Best Picture.
Okay, Crash. I never saw that.
Okay. Well, that movie is not what I'm talking about now, but it is similar. It's the same thing where it's like these people are just like loosely connected. But as far as Magnolia is concerned, as I said earlier, the vignettes in the beginning are like positing this like these really just insane connections. And these people are connected throughout the movie, but it's really kind of arbitrary. Like, oh, this person just happens to be related to this one. It's not like their being connected really makes a huge difference. It just happens to be that way.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the game show host is the father of this girl who's dating John C. Reilly, the cop. You know, it's not in any meaningful way. You can say at the end there are things where it's like, oh, this person crashed into this and she was led to her daughter. And it's... I keep holding off from talking about the ending. We'll get there in a second. Mm-hmm. The vignettes thing, like, I like that concept, and that's why...
Are you referring specifically to the guy getting hung, the three people getting hung in the beginning and the robbery?
No, just the idea of, like, this movie being a series of vignettes. Like, I like that concept.
I don't think it's... To call it vignettes is... I don't think that's necessarily... I mean, to calling the first, like, the intro with the people from, like, the forest fire and the boy that's committing suicide, like...
Okay, I'm saying like all these individual stories where it's like these little pockets, like let's check in with this character. Now let's go back to this and then we'll come back to this. I like that concept. Mm-hmm. And I think if the stories had been more interesting, I think the 3-hour runtime would not have bothered me, because there have been like there's a great Simpsons episode. It's like 22 short films about Springfield. And it's just little bite sized things where each one's like a minute long, basically. And it's just like it's fun to kind of hop around like that. And if it had hopped around through interesting stories, I'd be excited every time. It's like, oh, now we're back to the Philip Seymour Hoffman thing. Now we're at this thing. But they all just seem like they're heading somewhere. And I guess let's get to the end here. Where it heads is all these things happen, and then it starts raining frogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Unexplained. Well, a few times during the movie, you see this like Exodus 8:2 sign.
Yeah, that's alluded to. There's the lady holding a sign. There's like it keeps whenever it breaks on like a new day, it says the temperature and the weather, and like it's like 82 degrees. And then there's the bus stop billboard that says Exodus 8:2. And that from what I understand, that's a biblical thing. And it's just when some Bible guy was like, oh, I'm going to plague your land with frogs if you don't let these people go.
Well, as a as someone who went to Catholic school, let me tell you from memory that it's, then the Lord said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and tell him that this is what the Lord says, let my people go so that they may worship me. But if you refuse to let them go, I will plague your whole country with frogs. The Nile will teem with frogs. It'll teem. They will come into your palace. Your palace, right in your palace, up into your bedroom and onto your bed, into the houses of your officials and your people, and into your ovens and kneading bowls.
Wow, completely off the top of your head. That was amazing.
I believe that's it. You know, we had the Bibles during a mass. We had the
I mean, maybe
stuff,
a few words were wrong there, but that's, I think you got the main gist of it.
Which, weirdly enough, Exodus 8:2, we are currently, here's a little Dan and Bonk inside info. Every month, we put together a 1,000-piece puzzle.
Mm-hmm. It's a little thing we do together.
It is. And there's a certain brand, I guess, or line. Dowdle. They're called Dowdles. And I think it's some guy named Dowdle, probably.
Yes.
And he does these very Where's Waldo-ish.
It's like folk art, kind
of. Yeah. And it's very Where's Waldo-y in that it's a lot of very small, detailed stuff. You know, very great for a puzzle. And so we get a different one every month. And this one, it was called Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we saw it on Amazon, it was just like, oh, this looks crazy. There's like fire from the sky. And look at all these frogs and stuff. And then I think as we were looking at the poster, putting it together, it's like, oh, wait, is this a Bible thing? Because like, okay, there's a guy with the commandments.
Bunch
and there's
locusts.
The locusts. It's all very plague of locusts and fire from the sky. Mm. It's like, shit, we were so used to like, here's the dog by a lake, you know? So that weird, there's your coincidence.
Yeah, there you go. That's another storyline in Magnolia.
Yes. So yeah, the frog thing, that's how it ends. Yeah. And all these stories that maybe have, well, let's just talk about the stories themselves.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Like I said, there's a really big cast, and there are a lot of people that are related to one another. We have Stanley, who's the boy who is a genius, a little genius boy, and he's on the show What Do Kids Know, which is like a game show where there's a group of kids and a group of adults and they kind of square off.
Which the hardest game show ever, because it's stuff like, let's play this first part of this opera song, and then you have to repeat the second part in the original language. It was like, you have to do it in French or Spanish or wherever opera's from.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know you don't have to be French or Spanish to be an opera person. Right? I don't know where opera got invented. Is it the Renaissance? I don't know where the Renaissance is. That's probably England. I don't know. Okay, Italy? Was Italy an opera? Is opera an Italy
there's
thing?
There's still operas going on today.
Right, I know.
A lot of German opera.
Right, but maybe it originated somewhere, and maybe opera is associated with a certain... I have no idea. Probably Europe, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is opera associated with a nation?
I think of Germany when I think of opera.
Really? Okay.
Like Wagner. I don't know.
Okay.
So anyway, I think Wagner's German.
I don't know who that is.
Maybe he's Russian. I don't know.
Isn't that the guy that played number two in Austin Powers?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So Stanley, is the son of, his dad. I don't
Yeah, that's how that works.
Didn't write down his name, but, his dad's a bit of a jerk.
Yeah, he's a dick.
And we have... this is just going wonderfully. Philip Baker Hall, aka Bookman from Seinfeld, the book cop, the library cop from Seinfeld. Oh, okay. He plays Jimmy Gator, who hosts What Do Kids Know?
Oh, you're talking about the guy from The Rock who says, "Now this guy's my age. I have to get up three times a night to take a piss." That guy.
Yeah.
Okay. The guy with the mole.
He's been old his whole life, I guess.
I think so. Well, I guess The Rock came out in 96 and this was 99.
And
so.
Yeah, Bookman would have been Seinfeld.
I guess we're
the
very
time.
Specific late 90s period.
The only time I've seen him is when he's really old. Okay. So he's Jimmy Gator, and he's the father of Claudia. And Claudia has a serious coke problem. She's just constantly snorting coke,
just going to town every time we see her.
But it turns out she can't blame her, because she was sexually abused by Jimmy Gator. And then Claudia meets John C. Reilly's character, who plays an officer who seems to be a nice-hearted fellow,
a well-meaning dope.
And then we have Earl Partridge, who's like a big-timey TV executive, and he's really old and unbelievably rich, and he's dying.
Yes.
His son, Frank T.J. Mackey, creator of Seduce and Destroy, is like a pickup artist kind of guy. He's played by Tom Cruise, and he's ridiculous.
He's really good.
Ridiculous. Oh my god, he's amazing in this.
Were you doing a dick joke?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, okay. So the way you like looked at me when you were like dick.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
That's,
yeah.
That's a word that he says it a lot.
He talks about penises and vaginas a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he is the son of Earl.
Yes.
As I stated, Earl's nurse is Philip Seymour Hoffman. Phil Parma is a nice guy. We have William H. Macy, as we said, the quiz kid from yesteryear, who kind of, it seems like he's just been resting on his laurels his whole life and, hasn't really done anything other than been the quiz kid. Julianne Moore is Earl Partridge's wife, Linda.
Yeah.
Seems to have an issue with pharmaceutical drug abuse.
Oh, yes.
And, also, even though she started the relationship with, kind of nefarious intentions just to get his money, she ended up kind of falling for him, or so she says.
Right.
And this is, I think that's the main cast of characters, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, in a lot of the marketing when this came out, I remember it was, like, Tom Cruise was the biggest name here. And even a lot of the great, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman and stuff like that, like, wasn't a big part of it because he wasn't as big when it came out. I think his appearances in Paul Thomas Anderson movies definitely helped. But it was a big Cruise thing. And I remember Paul Thomas Anderson did not want him to be a big part of the... he didn't want it to just be seen as like, here's the Tom Cruise movie, because he's part of an ensemble here.
Do you even remember at all how this movie was marketed? Because I can't imagine.
It was weird. It was, you could just tell it was an ensemble cast. You could tell it was a lot of different stories and things. And the main story I remember hearing before it came out was that it was surprising that basically like Cruise's handlers or whoever his agent, the people in charge of his career, would let this very marketable leading man, good guy, play such a despicable character. Because, I mean, you look at all the stuff he did before, you know, the Top Guns, Mission Impossible, you know, Days of Thunder, all that stuff. He's a very likable, charismatic dude. And here, he's just the scum of the earth
right.
in this movie. It's almost like, he's like a Tony Robbins mixed with like, the like pickup artist guys and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's just despicable mm-hmm. in this. But he's so good.
He's great. He's completely 100% in it. And it's so funny too. It's so real because I think everyone that's listening to this probably has seen that famous Tom Cruise interview with not the one with Oprah, but the one in which I think it's with Matt Lauer, and he's like, "You're being glib," or whatever. You remember?
Oh, was this the one when he was talking about Brooke Shields being on postpartum depression drugs for postpartum depression? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. He kind of like in the interview in the movie, he kind of started to show that a little bit too. So it really struck a chord and seemed really real.
Yeah, it's that very real intensity that Tom Cruise has as a person, mm-hmm. but he is really good at channeling that. Mm-hmm. Like he was nominated for an Oscar for this for good reason. I like that's part of the thing that kind of bummed me out about this movie is that the performances are across the board great.
Yeah,
they're excellent. You know, Julianne Moore is awesome in mm-hmm. this, like all these great actors, Philip Seymour Hoffman, but it's just the movie isn't good.
No.
And there's one thing I kept thinking about during this, and it was the recent interview with Fiona Apple where she credits quitting cocaine on when she was dating Paul Thomas Anderson. At one night at a party or something, she was in a screening room with Paul Thomas Anderson and Quentin Tarantino, mm-hmm. and they were all on coke. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was just the most insufferable thing in the world. Her quote was, "Every addict should just get locked in a private movie theater with QT and PTA on coke, and they will never want to do it again." And can you imagine? Because, like, I don't know anything about Paul Thomas mm-hmm. Anderson. When I was getting ready for this podcast, I realized I didn't even know what he looks like. And I looked him up and I was like, holy shit, he's 49 now.
He's really young. He was 29 when this movie came out. So when it was in production, he was probably like 28 or something.
Yeah.
Which makes me, as a 28-year-old, it makes me feel like I got 1 year to make a Boogie Nights type right. of success.
Yeah. But I mean, it makes perfect sense that this would be his follow-up. Because mm-hmm. this young, very kind of... I could see him being kind of up his own ass mm-hmm. based on the way, he's one of my favorite, like There Will Be Blood, one of my favorite movies, period. Boogie Nights is incredible. Like, mm-hmm. I think he is a great, great director, but he had this one huge hit, Boogie Nights. And it's like, all right, he can literally do whatever he wants right. for a second one. This is Paul Thomas Anderson's Death Stranding.
Yeah. That's a really good point. It's like, it almost is good to have some constraints because you can be more creative within those constraints rather than just being able to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I think in some ways it's beneficial to have like a parameters that you have to work within.
Yeah, which, you know, when Death Stranding came out, I was just so excited that like, oh my God, if he was this good when he was constrained by Konami, imagine what Hideo Kojima is going to do here. Mm-hmm. And that was the exact same thing here. Granted, Metal Gear was over decades and this was one movie, but the same thing. Just your sophomore thing. Well, right. Again, Hideo Kojima, whatever. What I'm trying to say is Hideo Kojima let out a big dump when he made Death Stranding, mm-hmm. just like Paul Thomas Anderson did here. Although, I will say Magnolia's a turd. As someone who has dogs, I'll say it's a turd. Mm-hmm. Because a turd is easy to pick up and throw away. It's not great. You don't like the turd. But it's easy to just be like, all right, get out of here, turd.
Sure.
Hideo Kojima with Death Stranding kind of just spread his cheeks. And it was just like one of those really sloppy, just all over the sidewalk. It gets in the cracks. You're not like, you get the bag on your hand and there's just no way to scoop it up.
It's like when Razor would have diarrhea at home and then it would get into the crevices of the wood flooring.
Oh yeah, he ate something bad and there's like blood and stuff in there. Ugh. It's just the worst thing you've ever seen and touched. And that's Death Stranding. Magnolia is just a turd.
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to compare a bad video game to a bad movie because... Yeah. Movies or video games ask so much more of you because you have to be involved, and usually they're more than 3 hours long. Usually,
way more. Yeah. Well, you quit not too long after 3 hours in the case of Death Stranding, but indulgent is the word.
Yes, I almost wonder watching this movie, and I didn't look this up, but I wondered if Paul Thomas Anderson has weird father issues because think about it. Frank Mackey's dad, Earl, cheated on his mother and abandoned him. And because he did that, Frank had to take care of his mom, who was ill with cancer, and she ultimately died. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the setup for why he hates women or whatever. He tries to be this ultimate macho man because he hates his dad, because his dad abandoned him. And then Stanley's dad, Stanley the boy, puts a ton of pressure on him to do this show to the point where he doesn't care if he peed his pants. He still wants him to play.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy Gator obviously abused his daughter, Claudia. There's like a lot of terrible father stuff happening.
Yeah, I'm not very great at picking up on themes throughout movies. I usually just kind of take things at surface level. Mm-hmm. But I was even noticing that like, man, there's a lot of old guys that are dying and coming to terms with the fact that they did terrible things and cheated on their wives and things like that. And also... the main female characters, mainly Julianne Moore and Claudia, they're both just very hysterical, drug addicted, you know, like, you know, that's the same type of character. Yeah. So it's like, I was kind of doing some psychoanalysis there of just like, what's going on with this dude, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was, I just feel like, too, it was one of those things, like, you put all these pieces on the table, and you feel like you're all building to something, and then he didn't know what to do with it, so he was just like, Exodus, frogs, shower frogs.
Yeah, I read some interviews and stuff, and, like, he tried to kind of justify it and things like that, but, like, I just don't buy it. It's not a good movie.
We're not talking, we failed to mention, arguably, the most mind-boggling part of this movie. So Amy Mann's music, like, soundtrack is, plays a heavy role throughout the movie, I feel like, more than most soundtracks do.
Is it all her? I don't really know her.
I think it's either mostly her or all her.
Okay.
And at one point, all the major characters start singing along to this Amy Mann song. Like, in the midst of, like, a suicide attempt, the dying father sings it, Jason Robards' dying father. Like, everyone starts singing the song, and, like, it's just, that's the moment where the movie completely lost me.
Me too. Like, I still had hope up to that point. And even early in that sequence, like, it starts with Claudia singing it, and it's like, okay, they've established she listens to a lot of music at her place. Maybe she's just singing along, coked up, and they cut to someone else, and I was like, oh, maybe they're trying to say, like, it's on the radio right now, and everyone's listening to the same radio station. And then by the time, like, dying old man is just, like, singing along to it, and Tom Cruise in the car, it's like, oh, man, this is stupid as fuck.
It's so stupid.
It's incredibly indulgent. Also, okay, as much as I like William H. Macy, what the fuck were some of those scenes when he was in the bar and, like, him, and they were just talking in a way, like, they were talking very, like, not biblical, but very dramatic, like, because William H. Macy wants to get braces because he's in love with a bartender who has braces, and there's this old guy on the edge of the bar that seems like he might be paying the bartender for sex, but the way they talk to each other, I just had no idea what the fuck they were talking about.
Well, the one older guy that was at the bar and giving money to the bartender, he seemed to be like a kind of a highfalutin. He was like speaking in riddles and stuff like that.
That's the thing, yeah.
William H. Macy obviously saw like this threat to this, you know, he had this idea of a romance in his head and saw this other guy's threat. So he went over there drunk and tried to just talk to him and ended up kind of spewing his whole life story. And it seems like he's very repressed and, you know, obviously holding on to his youth, you know, where when he won that check, which is, or won that show, which is what, you know, his defining characteristic. He's whiz kid Donnie, whatever. But
who's always listening to like TLC or something in his car?
Yeah, I don't know. You know what else I wanted to mention? Like early on in the movie, John C. Reilly's character, the officer, goes to this house. There's like a disturbance and he gets called to this house. And they find a dead body in the closet.
Yeah.
That never goes anywhere.
Was that implied to, because I remember at the beginning, was somebody, does that go anywhere? Well, and there's the part where the little kid raps, and like he's like, I told you who the killer was. I meant to look that up and be like, oh, was that some big, like, Easter egg that if you were paying close enough attention, like, he tells the whole story. But, like, I read a bunch of stuff about this movie afterwards, and nobody mentioned that, so.
I have no idea.
Oh, it's just so, it brought me back so much to just being in film school and just seeing a bunch of idiots that thought they were doing really deep, like, oh, yeah, I'm really saying something here. And, like, I know Paul Thomas Anderson is an incredible director, and I know he is very good at what he does, but this movie, in particular, felt like some film school bullshit.
Yeah, it was not enjoyable, especially that, I feel like there's a clear line that you could separate the movie. It's before that song and after that song. After that song, I was just completely not interested. At one point, you paused the movie, and I saw there was like an hour left. I was like, oh my God.
I was thinking the same thing. And you know, when we're watching a movie and we're both liking it, every once in a while I'll take a break to go grab a drink or go to the bathroom, and I'll pause. And I think we'll usually just be like, oh man, this is really good. I'm really enjoying this. Mm-hmm. And I noticed every time, like, we'd pause, we would both silently see how much time was remaining, and we just wouldn't say anything. I'd go get my snacks and sit down. I was like, I don't think either of us like this. And we try not to talk about it too much before the podcast, but I could tell we were not into it.
No.
So yeah, it's, by the way, Paul Thomas Anderson and Paul W.S. Anderson, I always get confused, and they are very different directors. W.S., ooh, speaking of things that we've talked about doing in a soon-to-come episode, Mortal Kombat. He directed the Mortal Kombat movie and Event Horizon. So, very different movies than significantly less up their own ass. Yeah. Movies that know what they are and just go.
Fun movies.
Fun, silly movies with the best CG that holds up to the end of time, basically. So that was on Netflix. That is the old Magnolia there. Not great.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No.
But just a quick mention here. We watch a lot of movies and sometimes we'll be like, oh, this is a good one for the podcast. And then we'll watch it and be like, let's not do a podcast about that. But worth mentioning, we watched 2011's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yes.
Also on Netflix, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was kind of sold on like, it was very like critically acclaimed when it came out. And Gary Oldman's just one of our favorites. And so it's like, oh, sweet. Let's do it. And the rest of the cast seemed good. It was like Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, who's great, John Hurt, Benedict Cumberbatch. We watched the whole thing. We sat there. We were paying attention. It ended. And I don't think either of us knew what the fuck we just watched.
Well, I had a vague idea of what was going on. But there are certainly a tremendous amount of details that I was not able to appreciate because the story is so dense. And it didn't help that these guys speak with very thick accents. I think it would have been beneficial to use subtitles. But despite being very confused, I feel like we both agreed that it was a good movie.
That's the thing. It's like everything seemed like it was really good. I liked all the performances, the settings, the direction, the pacing, like all of it. It was really, really good. Mm-hmm. And especially at the end, they're playing this song and you see all the characters kind of like where they wound up and everything. And I was like, this seems like it's all really cool. I don't know what's happening though. Wait, why is that guy mad at that guy? I don't know. And even after like reading it, it's just like the whole movie. I was like, wait, who's Carla? What's going on? Like, I was so goddamn confused. Also, I was realizing watching it that I think we would be terrible spies in the Cold War.
I think I would be a good spy because I'm so unassuming.
But the second, I have times where I'll just test where, you know, I will try to get you to say something that I know isn't true. Like, mm-hmm. You will have, like, two dogs on your lap on the couch, and you will look like you're in heaven. You're just comfy at night on a couch with two dogs, and I'll be like, you know, you'll talk about how happy you are. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, okay, hey, do this. Look at me and convince me. Say, I hate having these puppies on my lap. And you will try, but you can't do it. You can't even come close to doing it. You're just smiling huge the whole time. It's like, no, I act mad that these puppies are on your lap. You can't do it.
Well, it's one thing if I have to say something that's just so ridiculously untrue, like that I hate puppies on my lap. It's another thing if I have to tell like a Russian consulate that the package is en route to his office or some shit.
I could toss one of Razor's toys underhanded softly in your direction and you would fall into the fetal position and squeak. Like, I don't think you keep your cool under things that you have to, on the fly, deal with.
Listen, we won't know until you try it out. CIA, if you're listening, give me a call. I think I'd be really good. I have a diverse set of skills. I'm willing to put myself in danger, in harm's way, for the good of the country. I like being alone. Just give me a call.
Yeah, and CIA.
I know you have my number.
And CIA, if you're listening, you know, we'll plug your thing. We'll plug the CIA on the podcast. We've got a podcast here. So, yeah, just tit for tat there. Mm. Yeah. So, let's close out with the old Hugh game.
Oh, Hugh.
You like the Hugh game?
I love the Hugh game. And just so the listeners at home know, I don't know what the question is. So, it takes me a while to get to the answer, that's why. It takes me a while to arrive at any point in painting the stream. I'm sure you guys are used to it. I appreciate your patience. Proceed, Daniel.
All right. I've pulled a card here. For those, if this is your first Hugh game episode, which I believe we debuted in Son of the Mask, what we do is we pull out a card from this Hugh game, which Hugh means comfort. It's the Swedish concept of comfort, right?
I think it's Danish. It's comfort, coziness, small pleasures, all the good things in life.
And so there's three questions. There's not like a whole board to it. And you basically just have conversation. And we figured it might be good to pull an old card and ask a question.
Yeah.
And speaking of comfort, this one's about prison.
Oh.
All right. Mm-hmm. This week's Hugh question. Would there be any benefits to being in prison?
The routine, and you wouldn't have to worry about any, like, you don't have to worry about, you know, paying for insurance. You don't have to worry about all the trivial aspects of daily life. You pretty much just have your routine and you just wait out your time, and you have an opportunity, depending on what kind of prison, I guess, you would have the opportunity to enrich yourself by reading or taking classes or whatever. It could be an opportunity for self-growth that a lot of people, when you're bombarded with everyday, you know,
temptation
every day, just the little tasks and routines and, you know, types of things that you have to do every day. With all that eliminated, you'd have a lot of time to reflect and, you know, maybe better yourself.
That's what I was thinking, is that you wouldn't, like, basically, I'm trying to think of what I would do other than just be in mortal terror all day, every day, is you just work out. You would know what to expect food-wise. I'm sure it's not the best food in the world, but it's not like you'd be tempted to, like, make a Wendy's run or eat a bunch of ice cream, because that's just not an option. And, yeah, I'm sure it's more complicated than this, but I assume you don't have to pay rent. Right, you probably still have to pay rent on the outside, right? Like if you had a lease. Like if I got arrested right now, I would probably still be responsible for the remainder of my lease. But after that, it's like, well, okay, I'm not paying an electric bill in prison. Like what taxes pay for prisons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's not on the prisoner.
Yeah, that would be good, I guess.
Not a good situation overall. Bad situation. But if we're trying to see like a benefit to being in there, I think having some routine and not having to pay for stuff is great.
Based on what I've seen in Orange is the New Black, I think you could like earn some money working in prison, and there's like a commissary and you can buy candy and snacks from there.
Yeah, I think there's like certain like little shops, whether they're physical or conceptual. And it's like, you can't buy cigarettes, I don't think. But yeah, you can buy little things or TV time, things like that.
I wouldn't do well in prison.
Me either.
I don't want to go there. I've never really done anything bad in my life, except for when I was a kid. But I don't want to go to prison. I just want everyone to be nice to me all the time.
Yeah, well, we don't have to worry. We respect the law. We've always been law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, I do respect the law. I don't even jaywalk. Even when there's no one around, I don't jaywalk. No. I always walk to the right corner.
Laws are there for a reason, and we follow them to a T, and we will not wind up in prison. So we don't have to worry about this. But the Hugh game, hey, it's, you know, it's what-ifs.
That's true. That was a good Hugh question. Now, there are other questions on the card. Are we just discarding that? Or
those we just do off mic.
Okay.
Yeah. I pulled the card. I picked one for the podcast.
Secret questions.
And then we'll have our secret questions afterwards.
Right. The audience will never know.
They won't.
We will unveil our biggest, darkest secrets.
Yes.
But they will never know.
We do talk when there's not microphones in front of our face, too.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Mostly icy glares.
We mumble to each other when we're doing our dowdle puzzles.
Yeah.
We go, oh, this is not a corner piece. Corner piece, too.
The corner piece first.
You know, the plant, it looks like a fan. Yeah. The green fan. Plant.
There's too many locusts on this one. This one's really hard. Folks, we want to give you a special thank you if you are a part of our Patreon. Special thank you. There it is. It is patreon.com/paintingthestream. We keep it real simple. It's $1 $5 tier. Gets you an ad-free version of this podcast.
It's so simple even a child could do it.
It's true. Hey, if you're a child listening to this, you know, sometimes your parents are just logged in to a thing. Go to patreon.com/paintingthestream and look for anything that says pay or subscribe now. Click and just sign them right up.
No, don't do that.
No?
No, because the last thing I want is for some parent to get angry about Painting the Stream. I want people to only have positive thoughts associated with Painting the Stream. So children, if you're listening and you want to be a patron, go ask your parents, be like, I want to support this Patreon. And then maybe if you get good grades in school and you don't do drugs, your parents will agree to support us on Patreon.
Exactly. So for all of you children listening to us talk about Magnolia on this niche podcast, don't spend your parents' money without asking on a Patreon. Ask your parents what Patreon is. So yes, it's a $5 tier. It is an ad-free version of the podcast each and every week.
Why are you sitting like that?
I don't know. He's
sitting with his chest out and his hands are
on his
back.
My back is weird. I'm trying to like do a thing.
It was weird.
That's how I sit now. What else do we do with the Patreon? We do the $5 ad-free. We do the episodes a day early, so you get them on Saturdays instead of Sundays. And we've been talking about some fun stuff we could do in the future about maybe doing some polls and things like that. We like to play around with the Patreon stuff. Thank you to everyone that is there. And if you like the podcast, check us out. $5 a month. Also, most importantly, I knew I was forgetting something. If you join the Patreon, you are going to get a custom made Bonku straight from Bonk.
Yes. Yes, Dan, that's true. I did do a Bonku. I didn't do it for you.
No.
I did it for the patrons.
I never got a Bonku.
I know. I just wanted to rhyme.
Okay.
Okay. This Bonku, you know, when you become a patron, you can pretty much put in whatever name you want.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't use their real names, and it makes it a little tricky for me.
Yeah.
But this was one of those cases. But here we go. It's for our friend CHMR64.
Okay.
Distraught, she called out, CHMR64, and fell to the floor.
Oh. Okay, so like calling out to CHMR64.
Yes.
Like needs help, probably.
Yeah.
And CHMR is a heroic figure?
Or it's some kind of crazy code word. Who knows?
Oh, like if you hear this, call the cops.
Maybe.
We'll never know. CHMR64 knows. No, they don't either.
Why don't they know?
Because you just wrote this, apropos of nothing they told you.
Oh, but I get a feeling.
Okay, all right. We hope you know what we're talking about, wink, and hope you're having a good day, CHMR. Hey, if you want to follow us on the old Twitter, we're at PanTheStream. If you want to email us, we're at panningthestream@gmail.com. If you want to give us 5 stars on the old Apple Podcast, what are you doing?
You're just doing weird things with your body.
I'm stretching. I'm just getting all the kinks out here. We're at the Apple Podcast. If you want to do the 5 stars there, that helps us out quite a bit. Thank you so much. What? Who's also just doing Norm. So this is like 3 levels removed from Norm. So thank you all for listening. Thank you to Tom Monda for the theme song. Thank you, Bonk, first
you,
and foremost, for joining me
each
and every week.
Thanks to this good boy, Razor.
He was good after some early weirdness. And then we'll go say hi to Gizmo, who's in the other room just being a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to you for listening.
Bye.
See you next week.